Stop!
Tanner's warning fell on deaf ears. She was only a few yards away when he triggered a shot into her right shoulder that spun her like a top.
Now maybe you'll listen to reason.
But the red-eyed harpy did no such thing. The berserker threw herself at them again, heedless of her wound and the blood seeping from it. This time it was Sax who squeezed off a 3-round burst that stitched her chest and hurled her against the wall.
That should stop her.
She acted like she was on angel dust. What the hell has been going on down here?
They passed the crumpled heap that had been the red-eyed woman. The female berserker's shriek brought them to a halt with their weapons leveled, but they didn't fire. They were frozen in horror and shock by the sight of the woman rising to her feet and baring her teeth.
It can't be! I killed her! You all saw it!
For a dead woman, she was remarkably agile. A lithe bound carried her to them. She kicked Romero, knocking him down, and attacked Sax. Before he could finish what he had started, her fingernails dug furrows in his neck, deep enough to draw blood. Romero cut loose on full auto from a prone position on the floor. His MP5 turned the woman into a sieve, yet she still didn't die. She had absorbed enough lead to kill 10 men, but came at them again.
What does it take to finish her off?
Tanner's eyes were as wide as walnuts, but Bert Anderson met her rush by jamming the muzzle of his SMG against her temple and splattering her brains to kingdom come. She deflated like a punctured balloon.
That's what it takes. Now, will you believe me when I say we are in over our heads?
I'll admit this isn't going as planned, but we can't call it quits until we've found Harkin.
The hell we can't? What if there are more like her?
We blow them away too.
Tanner moved on, but much more cautiously than before. Bert Anderson brought up the rear again, but this time he wasn't alone. Sax hung back, wiping off blood from the gashes in his neck with his sleeve, and extremely upset.
Well, what the hell has gotten into our fearless leader? Is he trying to get us all planted 6 feet under?
All he sees are dollar signs. He's always wanted EPI to play in the big leagues.
I know that. This isn't the way to do it. We should leave something like this to the expert.
What have I been saying all along?
I mean, that woman was stone cold psycho. Did you see her friggin' eyes? And how she took all that lead and kept getting back up? It's not natural, man. I have half a mind to tell Tanner to take a flying leap and split. It'll piss him off, but I don't care. Did you hear something?
Yes. Keep moving. It might be more of those things, whatever they are.
Next time one of those suckers shows its ugly face, I'm turning it into dog food.
Tanner reached the stairwell and motioned for quiet. He slowly opened the door, then signaled the coast is clear. They joined him on the landing. Their small flashlights alleviated some of the murk, but not enough. From out of the shadows came furtive sounds that did not bode well. Anderson and Sax looked at each other.
Damn motherfucking shit!
Stay frosty, gentlemen.
Frosty? If I were any frostier, I'd be an icicle.
At sub-level 2, Tanner halted.
We'll pair off and go from room to room. Bert and I will take the right side, Sax, you and Romero take the left. Watch each other's back.
Tanner pushed on into the corridor, but had taken only a couple of steps when muted popping from somewhere below brought him back to the landing.
Those were shots.
It's a regular firefight.
Sure as hell is. Somebody's up against more of those freaks, I bet.
It must be Harkin and his security people. No one else would have guns down here. Let's hustle. They might need our help.
It could be anyone. We're asking for trouble if we go racing down there without knowing what we're getting into.
Slow and safe won't save Luther Harkin. If I have to, I'll do this myself.
I mean...
Damn them.
God help us.
Anderson took the stairs two at a time. No more shots rang out, but that didn't dissuade Tanner from leading them steadily lower until they were at the landing to sublevel 9. He listened at the corridor, as he had at the others.
I don't hear a thing. They must be lower.
You're taking too much for granted. Let's play it safe and hold here until we know for sure.
You used to be someone I could count on through thick and thin. Now you've turned into my grandmother.
Silencio.
Footsteps rang on the metal stairs. The source was climbing toward them. At a gesture from Tanner, They ranged across the landing, their flashlights trained on the top step. The erratic footfalls convinced Anderson it had to be another lunatic, but the head and shoulders that appeared were a godsend. The industrialist sagged against the rail. He blinked in bewilderment.
Mr. Harkin?
Are you the military?
No, sir.
Tanner rose and removed his gas mask.
Executive Protection Incorporated, at your service. Fulfilling our end of the contract you have with our agency.
Tanner stood at attention as if he were still in the military and Harkin were his commander.
EPI! It's about damn time. I expected you hours ago.
We came as soon as we could, sir. You have no idea the difficulties we've encountered.
I pay you to surmount difficulties, not to use them as excuses. I could have been killed 10 times over since the lockdown went into effect. Out of the goodness of my heart, though, I'll overlook your lapse if you get me topside.
That's why we're here. But with the power down, we can't use the elevators, and the National Guard will have all the exits covered. So our only option is to make it onto the roof and lower ourselves down by rope.
There's another way. A utility tunnel on sub-level 6 that very few people know about. I can show you where it is. Just give me a minute to catch my breath.
Take all the time you want. You'll be pleased to hear there is no extra charge for this rescue. It's all part of the package.
It had damn well better be. You're lucky you showed up, or I'd have sued you for breach of contract.
Tanner leaned out over the edge. Anderson had to see for himself. Out of the darkness they slunk. Dozens of them. Scores. A small army of red-eyed demons who now...
Good God! Get behind us, Mr. Harkin. We'll do our best to protect you.
The executioner reacted automatically. He threw himself to the left and swept the hammer over his head, prepared to bash out the brains of the berserker before it could do him in. Only it wasn't a drooling madman. It was a grinning Englishman.
If I'd been a real McCoy, as you Yanks like to say, your neck would be crushed to a pulp and I'd be treating myself to a Bolenburger right about now.
Don't take this wrong, but what are you doing here? You're supposed to be guarding the others.
Chandler changed into one of those zombies and killed Carolyn. There was nothing I could do.
Brognola emerged from Lab 24 with Lucy Reese.
And Harkin? Wasn't he with you too? He's almost at the surface by now, would be my guess. Which is where we should be heading.
Have you seen any berserkers?
Dozens. But I was able to avoid them. Most were heading up the stairs. With any luck, they'll give Mr. Luther Harkin a taste of his own well-deserved medicine.
Let's go then.
Boland took a step but had the Beretta thrust at him butt first. McCarter wagged it. The Briton was sacrificing the edge the pistol gave him, a gesture that wasn't lost on Bolin.
I believe this is yours. I'll trade you for that hammer, and I won't take no for an answer.
Stay behind me. If I go down, do what you can to save Hal and the lady.
Bolin whirled and beheld a pair of crazies moving toward them. He snapped up the Beretta and had the first in his sights when he realized something was wrong with them. Both moved more stiffly and awkwardly than usual. Instead of drool dribbling over their chins, they were frothing at the mouth, like rabid dogs. As the soldier watched, the foremost aberration broke into convulsions. It fell onto its side and thrashed about like a fish out of water. The other berserker tried to step over the first, but their legs became entangled and it toppled. Seconds later, it was bucking and heaving, as if in the grip of an epileptic fit.
They've burned themselves out, just like that other one. What a horrible way to go.
Let's hope they all burn out.
He would rather avoid another clash if he could. Bolin figured he would find more berserkers at the bottom of the stairs, but there were none. Scuffling from higher up compelled him to point his flashlight overhead. Dozens of crazies were several stories above and climbing higher.
Looks like a mass exodus. Where could they be going?
There's your answer.
The beams of several flashlights were splashing over the stairwell and the walls. Someone else was up there. Someone still human. Someone the abominations were about to attack. The next instant, a new sound filtered down. the faint but unmistakable chug of SMGs outfitted with sound suppressors.
The National Guard, you think? Or maybe Harkin security people?
There's one way to find out.
Bolin climbed rapidly, but not so fast as to outdistance Brognola and Lucy Reese. Twice he had to slow down so they could catch up. Above them, the battle raged unchecked, with howls mixed with the chug of autofire.
Eat my teeth! Fuck you!
Motherfucker, come on!
Damn!
Stop them! Don't let them touch me! Don't let them touch me!
That was Luther Harkin!
Bolin looked up. For a fraction of a second, he was riveted by what he saw. Then he dived toward her. Clamping his free arm around her waist, he pulled her to the landing. They landed hard, scraped and bruised, but it couldn't be helped. Not if he was to save her life. Lucy pushed at Bolin's shoulders, then went rigid as a body crashed onto the landing in the exact spot where she had been standing. It struck with such force, the entire landing shook. The soldier rolled off her and onto his knees. By rights, the person who fell should be dead. Any normal person would be, but not the berserker. Another drooling travesty of all that was human. A man in his mid to late 30s, who sat up and didn't seem to notice that half his chest was caved in. Gleaming bone jutted from the twisted wreck that had once been his right arm. The creature spotted Brognola and lunged. Bolin raised the Beretta, but David McCarter beat him to the punch. The Briton stepped up close behind the loathsome horror and brought the hammer down on the crown of its head. The berserker shook spasmodically, then collapsed in a lifeless sprawl. High above, the conflict continued to rage. Crazies lay in heaps on the stairs, yet their numbers were barely dented. They flowed onto the landing like a tidal wave onto a shore. A hailstorm of lead chopped them down as soon as they showed themselves, but for everyone that fell, there were two to take its place.
Whoever it is, they're putting up a hell of a fight.
Bolin climbed faster. They were a few steps short of sub-level 10's landing when a tremendous explosion rocked the stairway.
Hit the deck!
Bolin flattened, throwing his hands over his head. Debris rained down, bits and chunks of the stairs and the masonry, along with bits and chunks of human bodies. A falling section of railing gouged Bolin's shoulder. A fist-sized piece of concrete missed his head by inches. Then came swirling tendrils of dust that coalesced into a choking cloud. The soft chugs of more auto fire showed the firefight wasn't over. Pushing a wreck, Bolin checked on his companions. McCarter was unhurt. Brognola had a deep cut above his right ear. Lucy Reese was bleeding from one cheek.
What was that?
A grenade. Now, the next flight of stairs. Can you make it on your own?
I'll take care of her. The two of you go on ahead. Whoever's up there might need all the help they can get.
Keep your eyes peeled and don't lag behind.
Shoulder to shoulder with McCarter, he bounded upward. He had to skirt a lot of bodies to reach the next landing, but that was nothing compared to the landing itself. Berserkers were stacked in heaps like so many cords of firewood, their craniums perforated by slug after slug. It was impossible to reach the other side without stepping on them. Bolin clambered onto the pile. He used care in not brushing against exposed skin. There were so many, a distinctly uneasy feeling gripped him. Everywhere he looked, a grotesque face stared back. He made sure each spot he stepped on would bear his weight before lifting his other leg. Bolin steadied his flashlight and saw several figures in black and another in a suit hastening upward. They had to notice his flashlight, but they didn't stop or call down to him. The reason became clear when he heard Luther Harkin.
Hurry up, damn you! Get me out of here while you still can! There might be a few of those things left!
Taking hold of the rail, Bolin hauled himself over the largest pile of bodies yet and finally reached the site of the firefight. Here the dead were 4 and 5 deep. Body parts were strewed at random, especially within the blast radius of the grenade. Whoever rescued Harkin had made their stand at the base of the next flight of stairs and held firm against all odds. Bolin's beam bathed a black-garbed figure on the fifth step up. A small, wiry Hispanic man had both arms over his belly and was doubled over, motionless. Bolin couldn't tell whether the man was alive or dead until he got closer. The man's head snapped up. He extended a Browning BDM pistol clutched in an unsteady hand, soaked with blood and gore. His pain-racked brown eyes narrowed. He lowered his gun.
You're not one of those things.
I'm Dr. Brown, from the CDC. We heard the shooting and came as fast as we could.
My name is Romero. They wouldn't stop coming. We'd kill them and kill them, but there were always more. We'd drop them in waves, but it was never enough.
How bad are you?
Any moment now. That's why I told my friends to leave me. Ever thought I would buy the farm like this, amigo? Got it by a damn ghoul. They were right on top of us. And one got a hold of my boot knife. Can you believe it? Killed with my own knife?
Where are the rest?
Taking Harkin out. Two of them were hurt, or they would have carried me.
Are you with Harkin Security?
No, Doctor. EPI. Executive Protection Incorporated. Harkin is one of our clients.
I'm surprised the VDEM gave you permission to come down here.
We did this on our own, hombre. Now they're escorting Harkin to DC. He wants to lie low and avoid the media for a while.
They're taking him to Washington straight from Spider Mountain?
Jeez. Harkin is offering a bonus of $100,000 if they can get him there with no one the wiser. I will never get to enjoy my share. Harkin knows the secret way out.
A utility tunnel, you reckon?
Romero, wake up. Don't go just yet. I gotta know something.
What is it, Doctor? I'm tired.
Did the ghouls touch any of your friends?
Touch them, Doctor? I don't understand. We fought them with all we had. With our guns, with our knives, with our fists.
Bloody hell.
Bolin twisted to inform Brock Nola, but there was no sign of the Big Fed or Lucy Reese.
Hell?
We're coming! It's taken us a while to get past all these bodies!
They couldn't afford to wait. Too much was at stake. Bolin turned to McCarter, who nodded.
What are you waiting for? I know what has to be done. Get cracking, mate, before that jackass springs about the end of civilization as we know it.
It was no exaggeration. Should the unthinkable occur, should the biotoxin be unleashed in a major urban center like the nation's capital, there might be no stopping it. By morning, there could be thousands of berserkers. Within 24 hours, hundreds of thousands. Bolin had to see to it that Luther Harkin and the EPI team didn't leave the Spider Mountain Research Facility, no matter what it took. He started up the stairs, but stopped after a few steps and tossed the Beretta to McCarter, who caught it without half trying.
You might need this more than I do.
Especially if there were any berserkers left. It would take quite a while for Brognola and Reese to reach the airlock, and they would be in danger every step of the way, so would he. But he was extremely proficient at hand-to-hand combat, and they weren't.
Bust Harkin and it chops for me.
The industrialist and the EPI team were climbing like bats out of hell. They had to be close to sublevel 6. Bolin pumped his legs, using the rail for extra leverage. He remembered to stay alert for crazies, but saw none until he was crossing the landing to sublevel 7. It was in the shadows, frothing and quaking, and paid no attention to him whatsoever. The soldier was almost to sublevel 6 when, without forewarning, the lights came back on. One second it was pitch black except for his flashlight. The next it was so bright the light made him squint. A loud hum and the whir of electronic circuits told him the power had been restored.
About time.
Bolin doubled his speed. Bolin was spurred by a mental image of hordes of crazies swarming through the streets of Washington. The police would be overrun, and troops would be called in to impose martial law. But would that be enough? He doubted it. Infected individuals would run riot through the countryside, and there weren't enough troops available on short notice to quarantine the entire District of Columbia, let alone the surrounding states. The soldier finally reached sublevel 6. He sprinted down the hall, avoiding a berserker who flapped about in the final stages of burnout. Soon, his worst fear was borne out. The airlock door hung wide open. Bolin had never liked Luther Harkin. The man was a financial tyrant who lorded it over his underlings and looked down his nose at those he deemed his inferiors. It was no secret Harkin always put his personal welfare before all else. But not until that moment had Bolin fully appreciated just how selfish and self-absorbed the tycoon truly was. All Harkin cared about was getting out of there. The lives of those who might become infected were of no consequence to him. The soldier wondered what the EPI men were thinking to endanger so many for the sake of one man. As he sped along the utility tunnel, it dawned on him that maybe the EPI team didn't know that contact with a berserker was all it took to spread the biotoxin. It would be just like Harkin not to tell them if it served Harkin's own ends. Bolin was running flat out, but there was no sign of his quarry. Soon he spied the inner door to the airlock in Annex D. It, too, had been left wide open. He hoped against hope that Harkin and the EPI team hadn't made it out on the other side of the airlock, but they had already gone through and were out of sight. Desperation lent wings to Bolin's feet. He was through the airlock before he saw the young National Guardsman crumpled on the floor. He stopped just long enough to confirm the guardsman was alive, then ran down the long aisle between the generators, past startled technicians, and out into the cool of the night. 20 feet away was Gloria Stinger, walking toward Annex A. She heard him and turned.
Yes, sir.
Is everybody ready?
We need to prepare for the worst. Hope for the best.
Yes, sir. 72 hours.
Dr. Brown, I was just about to report to Mr. Pratt that the power has been restored.
Did you see them?
Where's your biosuit? And what happened to Dr. Clancy?
He'll be along shortly. Did you see them?
See who?
Luther Harkin and several other men.
No, I sure haven't. But I have been on the phone with Director Benjamin, and he's on his way here to take personal command.
Bolin couldn't have cared less. He jogged toward the front gate. He didn't see how Harkin and EPI had snuck out of the generator building without being noticed, but apparently they had, which meant they would try to make it through the gate at any moment.
This is the BBC, reporting live from the Spider Mountain Research Facility. With us today, we have the former head of security for Halliburton Industries.
Four National Guardsmen were supposed to prevent unauthorized personnel from entering, but it never occurred to them that unauthorized personnel might try to leave. The gate had been left open wide enough for Luther Harkin to bolt through with the EPI crew hard on his heels. They were among the media before the National Guardsmen could think to stop them.
You there! Halt!
The sergeant's command had no more effect than if he had waved feathers in their faces. Bolin shouldered two of the guardsmen aside and was also among the crowd before they could recover. He had to push and shove to make headway.
Stop! Out of our way! Move, dammit!
Harkin's three black-suited rescuers had formed a wedge around him and were plowing through the media like a Spartan phalanx through the Persians. Bolin lost more ground than he gained. Reporters and other media personnel kept blocking his way.
Move out! We have a security breach! Get him!
Bolin glanced back to see an officer leading half a dozen guardsmen into the thick of things in pursuit. Bolin was glad to note that the members of EPI were wearing gloves. It might prevent spread of the biotoxin if any of them were infected. But one of them was bleeding, and it was likely blood could transmit the condition as effectively as sweat. Harkin and his bodyguards broke into the clear and ran in among the whirlybirds. Bolin tried to keep track of them, but being jostled constantly, and with shadows blanketing the aircraft, it was a hopeless proposition. He had 5 or 6 yards to go when a black helicopter rose on gossamer blades, banked sharply, and streaked to the east. Luther Harkin had done it. And in doing so, Harkin now posed the greatest threat to civilization since the bubonic plague.
No, sorry, Bob. He hasn't come in, out yet. Check that.
Jack Grimaldi was seated inside the Hughes talking to Stony Man when the executioner jerked open the door of the helicopter and hauled himself inside. Grimaldi covered the mouthpiece.
About time you got back. Bob is ready to have a cow, and Bear is none too happy either. Where's the big guy, the Mr. Bloody L?
Get this bird into the air and follow the copter that just left.
We've got Stryker. Trust me, I gotta go. Oh, goody, some action. Care to fill me in?
We've got an easily transmitted contagion aboard that helicopter. If they succeed in getting away, it would be like the Dawn of the Dead, the Incredible Hulk, and a pack of hyenas all rolled into one and set loose on the unsuspecting populace. Pretty much everyone inside Spider Mountain has been destroyed by being touched. Hal and McCarter are safe, as well as a CIA girl named Lucy Reese. We have to stop that chopper by any means necessary, even if the only way is to crash into their chopper.
A kamikaze mission? Even better. Although it will lose something in the translation. We need a real zero.
They'll be halfway to DC before we get off the ground.
Oh, ye of little faith. you think I would fly just any helicopter? This baby has been souped to the max and then some. Hang on to your false teeth.
You added armament, I hope. It would simplify matters greatly.
It's rigged for speed, not warfare. Sorry.
Raise Barbara. Tell her to have an F-16 scrambled in case we fail.
Wash your mouth out with soap. Failure isn't in my vocabulary. And it sure as blazes isn't in yours.
It never hurts to have a contingency plan, especially with so much at stake.
Roger that. Stony Man, this is Valkyrie 1. Do you read me? Over.
This is Stony Man. We read you loud and clear. How can we help you?
I need an F-16 ready to rock and roll a bell. High priority. Get Price to sign off. Lock in on my position and read the sky. Over.
We read you. Consider it done. Over and out.
Olin and Grimaldi continued to fly in tense silence, save for the whir of the blades and the throb of the engine. Bit by bit, they closed the distance. Olin would have given anything for an air-to-air missile or a nose-mounted M134 minigun. He was absorbed in mulling the best means of bringing the other chopper down when his friend poked his arm.
Take a gander at the bell.
The other helicopter was swinging from side to side, like a pendulum at the end of a string. It abruptly climbed straight up, then just as abruptly, dipped a good 50 feet. Suddenly, it streaked above the treetops, flying so low it was a wonder the copter's undercarriage wasn't scraping the upper branches. The bell was darting back and forth like a frenzied dragonfly. It climbed again, then veered southeast at a high rate of speed. In a display of supreme skill, Grimaldi paced the other craft with flawless precision. They were now within a couple of hundred yards. The other chopper began swaying back and forth like a boat tossed in a storm-swept sea.
Five will get you 10. They're looking for a spot to land. They must be having mechanical trouble.
Or some other kind.
That pilot is a nutcase. If I had to make a guess, I'd say someone was fighting the pilot for control of the stick. Look, there's a clearing yonder.
The Bell's pilot had apparently spotted it too, because the next moment, the Bell plummeted toward it at suicidal speed.
They're gonna crash!
No sooner were the words out of Grimaldi's mouth than the other copter hit the ground. The impact buckled the frame and bent the tail. Olin hoped that Harkin and the others had been knocked out. It would make his job that much easier. But he saw the passenger side door fly open, and an inky figure limped off into the darkness. Seconds later, a second figure emerged. This one moved with the stiff-legged gait the soldier had witnessed too many times already that day.
Take us down. As soon as I'm out, you're to dust off and stay in the air until I signal.
You going after those two guys alone? What am I, chopped liver? It's not like I haven't shot enough lowlifes to fill Yankee Stadium.
I need your peace.
Anyone ever mention that you have a bossy streak?
Olin held out his hand. Grimaldi handed over the pistol, then concentrated on landing. It was a Sig Sauer P220, Swiss-designed but German-made. Sigs were considered some of the best pistols in the world. A 9mm, it had enough stopping power to take down a normal man with no problem. But Bolin knew the Berserkers weren't normal.
Hey, what do you make of that?
A mile to the south were several small fires. Campfires, Bolin figured. Since hunting season wasn't for months yet, he doubted they were hunters. And since there weren't any lakes or rivers nearby, it couldn't be fishermen.
Backpackers, maybe, on a wilderness hike.
Grimaldi touched down as light as a feather.
Be careful, Sarge.
Grimaldi lifted off again the second Bolin was out the door. The bell resembled a broken toy. Much of the tail assembly lay on the ground. A spider web of cracks latticed the cockpit, and the door was crumpled like an accordion. The engine was dead, but the cockpit glowed with instrument lights that dimly bathed the slumped form of the pilot. Bolin worked the SIG's slide to feed around into the chamber. Holding the pistol in one hand and his flashlight in the other, he edged closer. The pilot didn't move, even when Bolin poked him with the flashlight. A mangled neck explained why. Another body was on the floor between the seats. A stocky man, with sandy crew-cut hair, lay in a spreading pool of blood. About to turn away, Bolin saw the man's eyes open. They were white, not red, and awash in agony. The man spotted him and tried to rise onto his elbows.
I saw you at Spider Mountain. You were chasing us.
That was me.
You've got to stop him. You've got to stop Sax. He's out there somewhere, and he's no longer human.
Sax is the black guy?
One of those things clawed him. That must be all it took. Poor Tanner. So much for his big idea. My name is Bert Anderson. We didn't know about these things when we went in. Honest to God, we didn't.
Luther Harkin didn't warn you about not letting them touch you?
That bastard? All he cares about is his own hide. Now I know why he insisted Sax sit in the back with me. He knew the whole time. I told him this was a bad setup. I told him we were out of our league. But do you think they would listen?
With that, Anderson died. An MP5 lay behind the pilot's seat. Bolin reached for it, then thought better of the idea. It might belong to Sax, and anything that belonged to him might have his sweat on it. In the distance, the campfires blazed. That was the direction Harkin had gone. Sax, too, probably, Bolin mused, and jogged into the trees. He listened for a few seconds, but heard only the leaves rustling in the stiff breeze. Plunging into the undergrowth, the soldier moved as swiftly as the dark and the terrain allowed. It was an unsettling feeling, knowing that somewhere out there lurked a creature created by science gone wrong. A monster that would attack without hesitation or mercy, and with the unique ability to turn everyone it touched into a carbon copy of itself. For hundreds of yards, the forest was unbroken. Then Bolin came to a gully. At the bottom, gurgled a creek. He descended a short grassy incline, leaped to the other side, and started up the facing slope. He would never know what made him glance to his left, whether it was a whisper of movement or pure instinct. But whatever it was, it saved his life. A shadow had detached itself from the night. Bolin twisted aside, but had the flashlight knocked from his grasp. The apparition that rose to confront him was nearly invisible against the backdrop of night. He didn't see the hand that clawed at his neck until it was inches from his throat. Jerking aside, Bolin leveled the pistol, but Sax was faster. An iron arm clipped Bolin on the shoulder and sent him tumbling. He ended up on his back in the creek. The soldier rolled upright and snapped off a shot at the man's head, but had to have missed. Bolin ducked under a blow aimed at his face. He dodged to the left, dodged to the right. Sax never relented, never gave him a breather. Backpedaling, Bolin fired twice at near point-blank range. The berserker tottered, sank onto one knee, and pitched forward. The flashlight was a few feet away on the creek bank. Bolin retrieved it and cautiously rolled the prone form over. His slugs were spaced a fraction apart above the right eyebrow. There was no time to lose. Scrambling up the south bank, the soldier settled into a dog trot. It was hard to say how much of a lead Luther Harkin had by now, but he was confident it wouldn't take long to overtake him. Harkin wasn't all that physically fit, while Bolin always kept himself in peak condition. But Bolin ate up the distance, and the yard stretched into half a mile, then three quarters of a mile. Bolin began to wonder. The forest was littered with logs and boulders, as well as thickets and other pockets of heavy brush. Low limbs also had to be avoided. They slowed him down, but not enough to account for why he hadn't caught up yet. Harkin was either in a lot better shape than he thought, or there was another, much more sinister reason. The three campfires were situated on a hill where they were visible for miles. Maybe, if Bolin was right, the thing Harkin had become sensed that where there were campfires, there would be prey. Bolin came to the base of the hill. A sound reached his ears. It took a few seconds for what he was hearing to register, and when it did, he threw all caution aside and raced upward with reckless regard for his own welfare. The soldier fairly flew. Soon Bolin glimpsed their camp off through the trees. Scouts in uniform, the same color his had been when he was their age. Some were roasting marshmallows on sticks. An accident of fate had placed them in the wrong place at the worst of times. Bolin imagined Harkin circling them, waiting for a chance to grab one.
Watch out! You're in danger!
He saw a scoutmaster rise and gesture for quiet, but most of the scouts didn't notice.
Get those kids into the tents!
Bolin shouted. It wasn't much, but it might delay Harkin a few seconds. And a few seconds were all he needed.
Quiet, please! May I have your attention? Into the tents! Now! Just do as you're told!
Bolin played his flashlight over the surrounding woods. To his right, a pair of red-rimmed eyes blinked at him from behind a tree. He angled toward the tree, but when he got there, Harkin was gone. Pivoting from side to side, Bolin probed the brush. There should be some sign of Harkin, but there wasn't. He couldn't understand it. There hadn't been time for Harkin to go very far. Without looking up, Bolin dived away from the tree. He heard the thud of Harkin's feet striking the ground. Then the man heaved up into a crouch. His flashlight caught Harkin full in the eyes, forcing the industrialist back a couple of steps. Few who knew the former captain of industry would have recognized him. His arrogant features were contorted in a bestial mask. The cruel mouth that once could not stop criticizing everyone around him now could not stop leaking drool. Elemental hatred was mirrored in his bloodshot eyes. Bolin snapped off a shot, but Harkin whipped to one side. The slug that was supposed to core the man's skull cored the tree instead. With a lightning-fast bound, Harkin seized Bolin by both wrists. The soldier tried not to think of the sweat coating Harkin's palms. He tried not to think of what would happen if it seeped through his black suit onto his skin. Twisting his hand, he tried to point the SIG at Harkin's face, but the bio-drug had turned Harkin into a Hercules. Not only couldn't Bolin move his hand, but his arms were slowly but inexorably being bent back. Harkin opened his mouth wider. His intent was plain. He would tear out Bolin's throat with his bare teeth. The executioner had other ideas. He let Harkin bend him backward, let his teeth come perilously close to his throat. Then, exerting every sinew he possessed to its limit, he twisted, hooked his right ankle behind Harkin's leg, and pushed. It threw Harkin off balance. The vice on Bolin's right wrist slackened just a little, enough for him to wrench his arm free. Instantly, he jammed the gun's muzzle against Harkin's forehead and banged off three shots. Luther Harkin was flung against the tree. His hands clawed at empty air. His knees caved, and he melted to the earth. It was over. Barbara Price chaired the meeting. Brognola considered that only fair, since she oversaw much of the op at Harkin Industries with Kurtzman's able input.
Every member from the various units that responded, from the CDC to the National Guard, have been closely monitored for the past month. Every reporter who was on site has been watched around the clock. There have been no new reports of biomorphs, as the classified report refers to them.
Bloody rabid loons is what they are.
Not as far as the public is concerned. The official line is that a biotoxin was to blame. No one will ever be the wiser, except us and a few others.
All's well that ends well, is that it? All those poor bastards lost their lives, and the government sweeps the whole mess under the rug? Bloody typical.
What else would you have the president do? Go public? Congress would raise a hue and cry to have every biofarm in the country shut down. He has to balance the good that comes out of them against this one incident.
What about Lucy Reese?
Like every other CIA employee, she had to sign a confidentiality agreement as a condition of her employment. She's been sworn to secrecy for the rest of her natural life.
If it helps, the government has given the families of the victims generous financial aid to tide them over.
Bought them off, in other words.
Is something bothering you?
I don't much like blowing away civilians, is all. It's not in a job description, if you know what I mean.
The executioner rose and came around the table and offered his hand.
I owe you an apology, David.
For what?
I didn't think you cared. I thought that to you it was just another op.
Give me a break, mate. The day I can kill women and old men and not feel a twinge of conscience is the day they should put me out to pasture.
McCarter thrust out his hand and shook.
Hal, if that's all, I'm due to meet Cowboy in a few minutes to test a new weapon.
He was almost at the door when he stopped and looked at McCarter.
We worked well together, David. You're a credit to Stony Man Farm. You're a hell of a man, and we couldn't have gotten out of there without you.
Bolin walked out.
Did you hear that?
Rising, McCarter hooked his thumbs in his belt and ambled out of the room.
All's well that ends well.
The Executioner Lockdown is a graphic audio production. Mac Bolin and The Executioner are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2004, Worldwide Library. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Jeff Baker, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Karen Carbone, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Thomas Penny, Christopher Grayville, James Lewis, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Ken Jackson. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Kyle Unaver, Carlos Anderson, and Temeskin Wubna. Graphic audio sound design by Kyle Unaver, Temeskin Wubna, and Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Tanya Perez. If you enjoyed The Executioner, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Mac Bolan and Stony Man, available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
The First Mountain Man 5, Cheyenne Challenge.
Pete, you've outlived your welcome at this rendezvous. Hell, and all the big empty for that matter. I reckon all these fellas here will go along with me when I say we want you out of camp before nightfall.
You're not even dry behind the ears yet. Who are you to tell me that?
I'm the man who's an inch from slitting your gizzard.
Turn me loose. I'll show this whippersnapper the error of his ways.
Oh, we'd be mighty pleased if you did.
Yellowstone Frank Parks, a close friend of Preacher's, released the arm he held.
All right, Preacher. Get ready for the ass-kicking of your life.
10 years ago, the legendary mountain man Preacher taught a violent lesson to Eastern bad man Ezra Pease when he ran the outlaw out of town. But Pease and his trail scum are back, shooting up the big empty to nail Preacher's hide to a tree.
Looks like we found the wrong place to be in.
The riffraff swarmed down the hill into the meadow where Beartooth and Preacher lay. They had 100 yards of open ground to cross to reach the mountain men.
They're getting in pistol range.
Two shaggy-haired louts appeared around the side of a large oak tree.
How many more of them?
Beartooth sighted in on a burly ruffian and homespun who zigzagged toward him.
Been too busy to count.
I'll make it 6.
4 after that one.
You're enjoying this, ain't you?
Well, it ain't my favorite mess to be caught up in. Still, there's something to be said for it. Sure keeps the blood pumping through your veins.
Beartooth groped for another pistol.
We'd best put an end to this right sudden. There might be more of these ragbags out there.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
The one called Quint showed himself then, along with 4 others.
You ain't got a chance, Preacher. We got you cold.
Now that's plumb unfriendly.
Preacher sighted in and fired the first barrel. Bark sprayed from the trunk of a big old silver-tipped fir. Quint jerked back behind the tree for protection. Preacher took aim on another of the misbegotten brethren.
See you next, Preacher?
Sure enough. We'll give him a little time. He'll show in the open in a bit.
That prediction proved true some 2 minutes later as Quint gained more altitude up the slope of boulders. Preacher had readied himself with a fancy French sporting rifle, and he popped the cap when the hole of Quint's left shoulder filled his sight. Both of the survivors had had enough.
They had to be Pease's men. Something's gonna have to be done.
Yeah, and if and I know you, it ain't gonna be pleasant for our Mr. Pease.
Preacher's riding to teach Pease one final deadly lesson. But he may be too late, because Pease's vicious dealings have fired up an all-out Indian war.
It was about 10 o'clock when Preacher first saw blacker shapes flitting from one bit of sparse cover to another. It didn't take long to figure out that it wasn't no pack of coyotes or wolves. One of them reared up abruptly and drew taut a bowstring. Another foeman quickly took his place. The hostiles were in too close for rifle, so Preacher ignored him to get one of his 4-barrel blitzers into action. By then, the drivers, led by Buck Dempsey, had opened up on the invading engine.
Preacher took his eyes off the assault and cut a quick look around the compound. He turned back just in time. Preacher had barely turned the next barrel into line when the young Pawnee rushed at him. Pour it on, boys!
Now, with hard-riding death on both sides, Preacher, along with his old friends Beartooth, Dupree, and Nighthawk, are heading straight into lead-flying, scalp-smashing hell. Don't miss the chance to blaze a trail to adventure with Preacher in the first Mountain Man 5, Cheyenne Challenge.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.